So hi, I'm Shoshana.
Hi.
I guess you know that. You're Evie, right?
Yes.
Sorry, I don't know your name.
Mayrov.
Mayrov, cool.
And I'm Sarah.
I know your name, but in case anyone doesn't know who Sarah is, she's
I think we know
Sarah. I had a feeling, but you never know. Okay, so...
Wait, who are you again?
Good question. This semester, I did a fellowship at Drisha, which is a learning institute on the Upper West Side, for those of you who don't know. And part of the fellowship is at the end you give a chavura, so this is my chavura that I'm giving. That we talked about, like, a lot about how stories are told in rabbinic literature, in the Torah, and in... Yeah, that pretty much covers it. So I decided that it would be cool to look at how Agadot are told and to, like, kind of focus on one thing. I was thinking, what kind of do the other characters in Agadot represent, and, like, why are they important, and, like, why are they chosen or not chosen? So in the first story that we're going to do, the one in Kiddushin, they're both Lamed Aleph, so that's a little confusing.
That's really
the one in, yeah, not on purpose. The one in Kiddushin. Does somebody want to read, or I could read?
Generally, I would, but I have less of a voice to work with.
That's totally fine.
I'll give it a go.
It's fine.
Sha'alu et Rabbi Eliezer, ad hichan kibud ha've'im, amar lahem, su'u ru'u ma asa ovi kochav imachad la'aviv ba'ashkelon, udama benetina shemo. So they asked Rabbi Eliezer, up to what point should you do kibud ha've'im? And they said to him, go and see what a non-Jewish person did for his father in Ashkelon, and his name is Dama ben Netina.
Okay, so I just want to stop and point out there that they very clearly make a point to say that he is an Ove Kochavim, meaning not a Jew. You totally got the translation. Students come to Rabbi Eliezer, ask, how far does the mitzvah of Kibud Ha'Ve'im go? And instead of giving them a direct answer, he's going to tell them a story about this non-Jew named Dama ben Netina.
I have just two questions.
Yeah.
When asking Ad Hichan, it sounds like there's a limit to what you could do for a mitzvah. Is that what they're presuming by using the words Ad Hichan? And the second
thing... interesting, because I felt... Yeah, that's what I thought it was like.
Okay. Like, it's kind of like...
Not the limit, I guess, but
what,
kind of like
what are
how
the expectations?
Far. Yeah, what's the maybe the minimum, and maybe that's an issue with their question in general.
Mm-hmm. Well, no, because I think what comes up is because, like, the rest of his stories, it's like he's literally going to lose out money. And there are certain expectations that when you're going to lose a business deal, what are you going to do? So it's saying, like, how far do I have to go? Because how much money he loses by not selling the stones but then by getting the power of Duma, which he wouldn't have gotten had he sold it, like, is that something that you can expect from a person? Because the father woke up and
said,
right.
So we're gonna get to those questions after we go through the story, so let's go through
it. Okay, and that was kind of one question. And the second question was, you noted that it's important that he's an Ovi Kochavim. Why do you think it's important for us to know that fact? Why do you think the Gemara thinks it's important?
So that's something I want to talk about at the end.
Oh, okay.
Meaning, like,
got it.
That's kind of what I mean by the other. I didn't...
Okay.
Okay,
we'll get to it at the end. So the Chachamim wanted to buy a stone for him from him that would, and they would have paid 60 ribuya, which I presume is a lot of money.
Right.
Rav Kahana matzni b'shlonim ribuya, but there's this other guy, Rav Kahana, who would have paid even 80 ribuya.
I think who says that he was offered.
Yeah, I think it's
offered.
Kind of
okay.
Like, one opinion, they offered him this much. A second opinion, they offered him.
Oh, got it. Okay. But if I am the Fateh, Munach. Patach Munach Echad Mirishotav Shal Aviv Velot Ciro. Dama ben Netina saw that a stone was underneath his father's head, and he didn't wake his father up. The Shana Ha'acharet, Natana Kadosh Baruch Hu Scharo, שנולדה לו פרה אדומה ועדרו, ונכנסו חכמים ישראל לצוב, אמר להם, יודע אני בכם שאם אני מבקש מכם כל ממון שבעולם, אתם נותנים לי, אלא אין אני מבקש מכם, אלא אותו ממון שיפסדתי בשביל כיבוד אבא. So, in the following year, it's like just as happened. Like he missed an opportunity of getting money for the stone, but in the next year, he was able to get that same money for the priceless item of the Parat Adima, knowing that he could have offered any amount, but he specifically offered the amount that was otherwise would have been offered for the stone.
So exactly. So basically, he's making the connection between, like, because he didn't wake up, the implication is because he didn't wake up his father, he got the Parat Adima, which Jews were willing to pay even more than, presumably, than they were for the stone. But as kind of like the goodness of his heart, he only is going to charge them as much as they were going to pay for the stone.
He seems like a very moral character.
That does seem to be the point of it.
Yeah. And also, like, kind of, it's like divine providence, it sounds like. Like, oh, it just happens to be that there's a Parat Adima in my edro. No, it's right. Like, really, it sounds like there's some, I don't know, someone working out all these events. There's some, like, some puppeteer, if you will.
Right.
V'amar Rav Chanina, Uma mi she'eno mitzaveh ve'oseh, kach mitzaveh ve'oseh. And someone who is not commanded and does, like the person who is commanded and does.
Kind of like, how much more so somebody, like someone who is not commanded went this far, how much more so...
If you are commanded.
If you are commanded, shall go that far.
What does it stand for, by the way?
What? Avdei Kochavim?
Oh, Avdei Kochavim de...
Then what's...
What's that?
The letters don't seem to match up for that.
No, that's not
Ein,
what it was.
It's Ein, Aleph, Chaf, Vav, Chaf.
I used to know this.
Do you want me to get a Torah Shei Tevot?
It's not like integral to what we're going
to
be talking about.
Yeah, but
if
like
you want to know,
gist, that's like, that's
then
the,
like yeah.
I mean, it sounds like that's basically the gist of what I'm saying, right? Like, it's
yeah.
Mitzvah Ve'osa, we Misha Inu Mitzvah Ve'osa. Like, it's better, like, given that Zama Minatina is not Jewish, she didn't have to, but it makes him that much better to do that. So it's actually interesting,
right.
Also, that, like, we're learning halacha from this.
Is it
don't
better, or is it
not
just the same?
Like, think that way, because if they talk about when somebody's chayv to do a mitzvah and somebody else is patur, but they want to do it themselves, like, it's not that I was told, oh, I have to, like, Hanukkah candles is that I want to. It's like, it's better for the person who was mitzvah to do the mitzvah rather than the person who decided to do it themselves.
Right. Mm-hmm. So I don't think that this is saying, like, it's better for the person who wasn't commanded. I think it's just saying, look, he wasn't commanded, but you are commanded, so you obviously need to go at least as far as he's willing to go.
Mm.
I think they're two, like, does it make sense, or two different ideas?
No, that does make sense.
But I think also to kind of...
Achad kam
v'chama. Oh, achad kam v'chama.
Yeah, okay. That makes sense.
So that it is integral.
So, I mean, also just kind of to build on what you're saying in respect to, like, bringing it to the practical, like, practical p'sak halacha, it sounds like if Dama Minatina would be potentially hafsed mamon, like, for not waking up his father. So too, when it comes to honoring our parents, we should be willing to lose lots of money for them.
Right.
Well, I mean, like, I'm saying, if you want to, like,
and we can get into the discussion
Gaza,
of, like, are we
yeah.
take, like, how literally are we taking the story, and, like, do we have to do everything exactly how he did it? And we're going to talk about that, but let's.
Okay.
And if you want somebody else to take over reading,
I'm fine either way.
Okay. Keep going then.
Okay. Amar Rav Yosef, Mirish, what's that?
Mirish.
Well, he's the head of something. Mandahava Amar Li, Halacha Karebi Yehuda, Ta Amar Suma Patzer Min HaMitzvot, Avdina Yomatava LeRabanan, Ta Ha Lo Mifkedina Vaha of Dina Hashta Dishmi Atalei Laha. So the one who told me that the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda, who says that a blind person is exempt from the mitzvot. There was a good day for the rabbis, and he was not Mafkadina. I don't know what that means. The implication is that this blind person now is listening to them. I'm kind of getting lost in the internet here, but...
Okay, sorry. I made the stopping point at the wrong place. That's my bad. You could have stopped at...
I mean, basically, it kind of like, in the Gemara's usual nature, it's kind of digressing into saying, we're talking about someone who's blind and, I guess, engaging in a mitzvah, which he otherwise would be patur from, given that he's blind.
Right. So we can stop after she'eino mitzvah ve'osa. And so what I pointed out in the beginning was pay attention to the fact that they make a big deal that he's not Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
So my big question when I read the Segadata was, they went to Rabbi Eliezer and they said, how far does the mitzvah of Kibud Av V'Aim go? And he gave them a great story about someone, but like about someone who's not actually obligated in the mitzvah. Is that because he couldn't find anybody who, like, there was no Jewish person that he could have told a story about? Like, they were, assumedly he was...
Or he couldn't give a straight answer.
He couldn't, right. Mm-hmm. Well, he could give a straight answer. That's pretty typical, I would say, of
Kibud Av. Right.
It's always a question you can ask. I'm not delegitimizing your question. The part that, like, was kind of, like, weird to me was just that there was no story about, like, kind of somebody from the tribe who epitomized Kibud Av V'Aim that you have to, like, go kind of out. You know, like, when you are giving people an example of something, you typically want to give something that they're going to relate to. So there was no one kind of who was a more relatable figure that he could give. Do you think it was intentional that he chose somebody who was outside of the tribe so that he could make kind of the Kal V'Chomer? Do you think that adds so much to it that it was worth it?
So, can I say something?
Yeah.
I think that Kibud Av V'Aim as like a theme, kind of, is a mitzvah that's a weird mitzvah. Like, why should you be, like, you know, obligated to honor your parents? That's like more of a moral thing, and like having it being classified as a mitzvah, like, might feel a little strange. So I think it's actually interesting he's bringing someone who's not commanded to do it, and like he's showing that, like, it's not just a commandment that, like, you know, it's another rule you have to follow. Like, no, this is like a moral thing that everyone wants or has inside of them, and like it's a moral framework of society, I guess, that you should honor your parents, and it's not just something that's like coming from the Torah. So when you're trying to figure out like how far you should go in it, it's also like a personal or like a human caliber. It's not just a Torah caliber. So, yeah.
And then also kind of like building off that is that it's a moral thing. So it's in everyone. So God doesn't really have to command you to respect your parents, because like they're your parents. Most people are going to do that anyway. And so I think they bring him up because if he's not even commanded to, he has no mitzvah. He's just doing this because he has like this genuine love and respect for his father. Then the Jews also, because they're saying, okay, who is going to like best exemplify Kibud Av V'Aim? So then the Jews, alacha kama v'kama, who are chayev, like, this is how much you should be doing. Not because it's because even if it's not a chiyuv to you, and you're just like, oh, I have to do it because like they're my parents, like, he's not doing it because it's a chiyuv. He's doing it because he genuinely respects his father. And that's
kind of like the mindset you're saying that we should have when we do it.
Yeah.
So it's interesting that everyone's saying it's something obvious, which like the Rambam points out also that a lot that it falls into the category of like logical mitzvot that people would figure out anyway. But it is one of the big ten. So like obviously God felt it was important to have in writing. It wasn't that obvious. So I don't know if
some of the big ten.
Right.
I'll say, though, that even if it's logical and it makes sense that we should honor our parents in gratitude for all that they give us, do we really live up to our ideals? Like, does that always happen? Like, we often have, like, a really great conception of ourselves that we're so wonderful and great and lovely, but do we ever measure up to someone like Donovan and Tina, who didn't even wake up his father? Like, it mattered so much to, like, make sure his father wouldn't lose any sleep. I mean, but for that matter, I mean, it's ironic, though, because maybe his father was really angry about this.
Maybe right. his baby's father would have said,
like,
you had this amazing business deal.
I remember the first time.
And they would have even used the stone for religious purposes. And then you were Hefseid Mammon to our whole family because you didn't do it. Like, Dama Menatina, you're an idiot. It's possible that his father had that reaction. But
it is possible. I remember when I first learned the story, like when I was younger, I thought, pretty sure my dad would want me to wake him up.
Yeah.
But the thing is, the reason
me to wake him up for show.
When they say Dama Menatina, are we saying that his mom is like is the name Natina, or is she like a Natina, like one of the Sheva Amamim?
Mm-hmm. Oh, interesting.
Because then there's like the whole suffix where she's Jewish, but she might not be Jewish, which might not add anything, but could just be interesting.
Mm-hmm. That is really interesting, and I had not thought about it, honestly. So that's really cool. What do you think that would add if it...
I mean, it could just add kind of like a more of just kind of like an oomph to the... If we're going with the morality point.
Right.
Because like... He's a Natina, like he's the son of a Natina. Are Natini really are they Garen? So are they obligated? So like it's not even like
right.
Oh, he's not even obligated. No.
Right. Based on what Rabbi Eliezer says, it's pretty clear that when he's telling the story, he doesn't. Or Rabbi Hanina is it? Rabbi Hanina doesn't think that Dama ben Natina was obligated in what he did. Like that's his whole point. So. It's still an interesting point, like, what is the relevance of having Ben Natina there, and I don't know. But I feel like we definitely, like, they make a big deal of saying that he is an Oved Kochavim and that he wasn't obligated, he did it anyway, so.
I have a question that's more geared towards, like, Meirav Ben Adiv. You're mentioning how there's, how Dama Ben Natina is exemplifying a moral element to the mitzvah. So, as Jewish people, when we think about mitzvot ben adam lechaveiro, which have a clear moral element to it, how should we do the mitzvot so that we acknowledge its moral element, but take it the next step further and using it towards our avodat Hashem? As in, I think every mitzvah ben adam lechaveiro should in some way lead you to your enhancing your relationship ben adam lemakom. And for the Venetina, because he wasn't Jewish, that latter element wasn't a part of the conversation, perhaps. So as Jewish people, though, how can we take it the next step further?
So and something I'm just, like, thinking about, and, like, maybe I can, like, tie it into your question, is that a lot of these commandments seem to only be relevant when there's a problem. Like, I should honor my parents when I don't, mm-hmm. when I have a problem with my parents. I should honor my father when he's not, like, giving me something I want, or, like, I have a bad relationship with them, any of those things. And, like, also with other, like, I don't like this person, so, like, I have to be nice to her because I'm commanded mm-hmm. in that mitzvah. So I think that something that, you know, would be something that would show that, like, you're doing it because you're commanded in it is, like, having respect for your parents, having respect for someone else when, like, there isn't a problem. When, you know, you really like your friend, you really have a great relationship with your parents, and, like, you are, like, respecting them because it's also, like, a law that was passed down in the Torah.
I would go in a different direction in response to your question. First of all, there's the everyone's created B'Tselem Elokim. So in theory, when we are, like, treating each other well, we are treating someone who is almost godly well. And also, if you're familiar with Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, who is kind of the head of the Musar movement, I don't agree with everything he says, but one quote that he has that I really like is, my brother's physical needs are my spiritual needs. And the implication being, when you help other people out, you are becoming a better person and therefore enhancing yourself spiritually and bring yourself closer to God. So that's kind of how I look at it. But it is way worse.
They all work.
it's
a good thing.
Yeah.
Yes.
For sure. Okay, so that's something to think about. And now kind of put that story on the side. And we're going to go to the story in Shabbos. And if anyone wants to volunteer to read.
Can you volunteer for a minute?
Sure. You can do a minute and then you can do the rest.
Shehavu zetzeh אמרו, כל מי שילך ויקנית את הלל, ייטול 400 זוז. אמרו?
Like they said.
Okay. שאמרו זה זה, one to the other. אמרו, כל מי שילך ויקנית.
It's kind of, it's like hard stuff.
Does something to
you. Yeah. I wouldn't know it if I hadn't looked it up before, so don't worry about it. Basically, two guys are talking, and they say to each other, let's try to... I'm trying to think of a nicer way to say it. Not piss off.
trying to upstagger me.
This is
the thing
yeah.
with
let's try to get
Shammai.
Basically, yeah, let's try to get Hillel mad. And whoever can get Hillel mad first gets 400 zoos. Mm. So this is a fun game, right? Like, let's make the rabbi mad.
הקניתנו אותו היום על שם, על שם היה, והלל חפף את ראשו.
ערב שבת.
Oh, ערב שבת. היה הלל חפף את ראשו, הלך ועבר על פתח ביתו. So he just gotten back from the bath, basically.
Yeah.
And he was just getting home. אמר, מי כאן הלל? Says, who here is הלל? מי כאן הלל? נתעטף ויצא לקראתו. Oh, he had just
like,
gotten home and like taken off his whatever he was wearing on his head.
Right, and the guy comes and he's like,
guy comes and says, who's Hillel? And he puts it back on and comes out to greet him. אמר לו, בני, מה אתה מבקש? What are you asking for? אמר לי, שאלה יש לי לשאול. So I have a question. אמר לי, שאל בני. Ask my son, מפני מה עיניהן של תלמודין?
Wait, where are you reading?
מפני מה עיניהן?
Do you have different words in
it? Unless I skipped a line.
Yeah, I think
yeah,
you skipped to the end.
I may have skipped a line.
No. Go to the first and the beginning of the line,
okay.
Mipnei.
Yeah, Mipnei Ma here. Wow. But really, like, your voice kind of sounds like it's hurting you, so if
yeah,
you want to take a break, Adi, do you want to take over?
Sure. Sha'al Mipnei Ma Roshen Shel Bavlim Skal Gelot. So why are the heads of Bavli, the Babylonians,
yeah.
okay, round?
Yeah.
Amar le, b'ni, she'ela gdola sh'alta, you asked a very big question. Mipnei she'ein lahem chayot, because they don't have, chayot kachot, right?
Yeah.
Because they do not have, I don't know what that means.
They don't have skillful midwives.
Skillful midwives. Halach v'him tin sha'a achat. He went and waited an hour. Chazar v'amar, mikan. Hillel, mikan, Hillel. So he goes back and he asks, who's here? He answers, Hillel, who's here? He answers, Hillel. Nidatef v'yatza l'kratzo. Hillel again wrapped himself up and went outside. Amar lo b'ni, ma tamakesh. He asks, what are you seeking for? Amar lo she'ela yeshli lish'ol. Amar lo sha'al. She says, ask it. Sha'al, mipnei ma inehen shel tarmodin. Trutot. Why are the eyes of the Tarmodin something? What's Trutot?
Bleared.
Amar lo, b'ni, she'ela gdo'ash.
Like blurry, like why can't they see well, I think.
She'ela gdo'ash, I'll tell you, that's a big question. B'nei she darin bein hacholot. Because they live amongst the sick.
The sand, I think.
The
yeah,
sand. That makes more sense.
But that's confused.
Sand boy.
Yeah, that makes sense. Their eyes skin.
Okay. Halach v'im tin sha'a achat. He went and waited an hour. Chazar v'amar, mikan Hillel, mikan Hillel. So he goes back. He says, it's true. He goes back and he calls out, who's here? Hillel says, Hillel. Again, he says, who's here? Hillel says, Hillel. He's a teyfer yatza, likreto. Hillel wraps him up and goes to meet him. Amar lo b'ni.
Just for a second. I think I was saying, like, mikan Hillel. He's saying kind of like, Hillel, where are you?
Oh, yeah?
Not like, who's here? And he's like, Hillel's still here.
Oh, okay. Oh,
I thought that they were saying, like, is anyone here Hillel? Like, which guy is Hillel?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Is that what it is?
That's, yeah, that's, all right. That's what it is.
I thought it was like, it's Hillel. I'm here.
You're still Hillel?
What? You haven't changed that in the last hour?
I think probably.
No, I think it's what Hillel's saying. Is. Like, I haven't changed. I'm still Hillel. Like, why are you still...
So I think the point gets made regardless of which way you read it. But
it's being annoying.
Yes. All right. Yeah.
Okay, he asked a question. Why are the legs of Ephraim wide? Because they live amongst the
marshes.
Marshes. Okay.
So like swampy places, I guess.
Amarlo, Shaylot Harbe Yishli. I have a lot of questions. The Mitireani Shema Tichos, and I'm afraid that you're gonna get upset. Itatefi Ashab Lefanav. He wraps off and sat in front of him. Amarlo, Kol Shaylot Shigesh Lachalish Ol Sha'al. Ask any questions you want. Amarle, Atahu Hillel Shikorino Tcha Nasi Israel. You are Hillel, that they call you the Prince of Israel. Or the leader.
The leader, yeah.
Leader. Amar le, hein, yes. Amar le, imatahu, lo yirbu kmotcha b'Yisrael. If that is you, then there are not that many people like you, or there shouldn't be that many people like you in Israel? Which one is it?
There should not be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There should not be more like you.
Yeah.
Amar le v'ni, mipnei ma. Why? Amar le, mipnei she'avati al yadcha dal mil zuz. Because of you, I have lost 400 zuz. Amarle, Havi Zahir Beruchacha, Kidei Hu, I don't know what to say. Havi Zahir Beruchacha, Kidei Hu Hillel, Shete Aved Al Yado Dalin Ma'ot Zuz. The Dalin Ma'ot Zuz, the Hillel Yakapid. I don't know what that meant.
No matter what you do, he'll
Basically, I mean, the point is, like, yeah, like, you not only, I guess, like, not only did you, like, lose the money that you had to pay, but you also, like, you didn't get the money you would have gotten if you won the bet, so it's kind of like he lost twice, and, like, even, like, after Hillel heard, like, everything, and, like, the guy was so annoying, he didn't get mad. So, I think it's interesting that in this story, there's clearly, like, the point is kind of teaching the virtue of patience. At least that's what I took from it. If anybody else sees a different overarching theme, feel free to speak up. But I think the point is supposed to be, and then there's a bunch of other stories that follow that are about Hillel, and some of them contrast Hillel and Shammai and show Hillel as a little more understanding and sensitive of a person and more patient than Shammai.
And not willing to whack people with the builder's cubit?
And not willing to whack people with the builder's
cubit. Well, the funny thing is that some of these questions are really good questions, but they're just asked to the wrong person. As in, like, it's a really interesting genetic question. Why is it that different races of people have different genetic qualities? Like, that's a really cool question to ask.
Is it true, though?
But, I mean, I don't know if it's exactly true.
I feel like he's just making this up.
I mean, it may just be, like, epigenetics here, which is, like, not really real, but... But, I mean, it's still an interesting question to ask. Like, why is it that people, why some people have better eyesight than others? Or why is it that people have rounder heads than others or longer legs than others? That seems to just be, or whatever, wider, excuse me. So it's, that could be an interesting question. But Hillel doesn't deal with that. Hillel is a rabbi. And I think it also kind of goes to show,
like... And
also,
is that something, like, you need to be knocking on his door, Erev Shabbos, like, just had a great question about, like, the size of people's feet. You know, like, usually when people knock on a rabbi's door, like, right before Shabbos, it's because they're, it's, like, urgent. They're not sure, like, is the Erev down, or, like, all my food might be treif, like, something, like, that's kind of bigger halachically. Mm-hmm. This doesn't even seem like they're really halachic questions.
But yeah. I don't think Hillel's answering that seriously, because it seems like he's also having fun with the guy.
Mm-hmm. Right, so that's unclear. It could be that he's
letting him ask the questions, but, like, he's not actually, like, paying him any attention.
So it depends how you read Shah Gadalta, right? Does it mean like, wow, what a good question, in like a really sarcastic, like
condescending tone,
right? Mm-hmm. Or is it like, that's actually a really good question, and like, I'm
gonna think about it.
Yeah, I'm like really gonna sit you down and give you an answer. And based on like the asker's response to like, wow, how like there probably are, there's not a lot of people like you, I kind of feel like he probably wasn't being so overtly condescending. Yeah. But it's possible he was. You can't really say for sure. I just think it's interesting that in both of the Agatotto, we're trying to get a lesson across, right? In the first one, before you came, we went through the story of Dhamma Benatina, and I don't know if you know the story about the guy whose dad was sleeping with the precious stone under his head, and he didn't wake him up because he didn't want to wake up his father for keeping up the aim, and they would have paid him a lot of money. Yeah. But, yeah. So we were talking about that, and how it's interesting that that story is used, and the kind of main character of that story is not Jewish, and that's used to epitomize keep it up aim, whereas here, we're epitomizing patience, and we are using not only, like, a Jewish character, but a really important, like, prominent rabbi. So what are the two, like, how do the two kind of differ in how they tell the story and the effect that they have given the characters that they use?
I think one difference is structural, where in Shabbat, there's the structure of, like, the same thing happening three times, then lesson. Which can be seen in many Agadot or even many stories in Tanakh, where you have the same event happening three times, but with slight differences in each one of those times. Mm-hmm. Whereas in Kiddushin, it's more cause and effect model, where cause being knocking on the door to get the stone. No, we're not going to give it to you. Effect, like the next year, he's selling the cow. Right? So it seems to be much more of a transition with the Mimenatina versus Shabbat, where it's about having the same thing effectively happening three times.
Okay. But in terms of the characters, does anything like strike you in the choice of characters? If not, that's okay.
It's like we define patience as like a mitzvah of an other mitzvah, but like patience is not really like an actual mitzvah, is it?
Right.
And, saying, then, like, they're using the Jew to exemplify a non-mitzvah and the non-Jew to exemplify an actual mitzvah, like one of the 10 biggest mitzvahs in the Torah.
Yeah, so that's really interesting.
I have nothing to say, but I just have that to say.
Well, I think that could go back to what we were saying before when we bring in morality, and we're saying, even, like, Kibbutz of Aim is one of the big 10, but it's also kind of a logical, moral thing that you need to keep. And patience is not. Mm-hmm. Right, but it's kind of a logical, ethical thing that you would want people to have
found.
But not always found, but is a great virtue to have. And maybe the idea, and obviously like these two stories are not actually next to each other in the Gemara, so this is me like putting them next to each other. But the idea would be like when even something
off. That must
right,
mean something.
Yeah, we're talking about it's confusing because I kept on being like Lamed Aleph, but like different Lamed Aleph. That maybe the idea is to point out that it's not all about like halacha without feeling, kind of without emotion. Like what we were saying about how following the Torah should bring us to a higher spiritual level and make you like a better person, that it's not all about like following the letter of the law but also the spirit of the law. And it may not say anywhere in the Torah be patient, but it's still clearly a virtue that the Gemara is exemplifying and saying this is something that our leaders do and that we like look up to,
right? And to me it seems like the one in Kiddushin, right, that was the Latino one,
yeah,
that's the same opposite of that, that like it's more than just the letter of the law. It's also the spirit, because this is not someone who's trying to keep the letter of the law.
Right.
So, that's cool.
So I thought that was cool.
I like it.
Thanks.
This is a Lord for Shabbos.
Yeah. If anybody else has any thoughts,
You mentioned how you're going to explore the role of the other. So, either of these stories, who do you think is the other, and what is their impact in the story?
So, I would say that
we're discussing.
Don't worry about it. It's totally fine. Right. So, I would say that in the Dumma Benettina story, it's interesting because Dumma Benettina is the main character of the story, mm-hmm. but at the same time, he's the non-Jew.
And therefore the other.
Whereas here, kind of the other would be the guy trying to bother Hillel. Like, Hillel is clearly the main character that we're supposed to, like, look at him. He did something awesome. He's, like, so patient, so, like, someone you should try to emulate. And the other is kind of the guy, kind of like his foil.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in literature, they'll put somebody who's the opposite of a character near them to exemplify that character's traits.
Mm-hmm.
So they put this really annoying guy next to Hillel to exemplify how patient Hillel is. That was how I saw it.
So I just wanted to know. Okay, yeah. So Rashi, I just read it really fast. It says, mm-hmm.
Which one?
Mikan Hillel.
Yeah.
That one. So, is it saying, Kun Kan Hillel v'lashon gunai l'nasi Yisrael? Is it saying that, like, it could refer to any Nasi Yisrael?
No.
He's referring to the Nasi Yisrael by his first name.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Right.
That
is something that, like, yeah. That's, like, an added level of, like, if you did that to Shammai, he'd probably, like, kick
you
out of town.
The builder's stupid.
Yeah.
sorry.
Later on this stuff, Shammai does whack somebody. That's why she keeps referencing them. So. Yeah.
I won't say that
because
that's what
I'm going to say. You know what I find really bizarre about the story of Hillel and is that what if Hillel really shouldn't have had this perspective? Like, someone is basically wasting his time asking him stupid questions and is patient and he's listening to all of them. But really, what if he just would say, wouldn't it be better to just say, if you're going to take my time and ask me a reasonable question? No, Hillel says, Amar lo, kol she'elo she'esh lecha, lishol.
It kind of reminds me of the...
Lishol, sha'al. Like, ask me everything.
Hillel reminds
me
of the teacher who says there's no such thing as a stupid question.
But he does. At the end, he does say it's a stupid question. Because he's saying no matter what you would have done, you would have lost the 400 zoos. Mm. Like, I was never going to get upset. And I think he's kind of, like, admitting there, like, I know what you're trying to do, and, like, it would never, ever have worked. Because, like, teaching you a lesson.
Well, he only knows
because
the guy told him.
Yeah? You think?
How else would he have known?
That's what the guy was trying to do.
Yeah. And that also brings up a whole nother question of, like, your own kavod versus the other stories about your parents' kavod. Like, you're saying Hillel should have stood up for his kavod and been like, you're wasting my time, I'm an important person.
Yeah, I think it's
so
totally reasonable.
Right, but to what extent does that apply?
I think also, like, the role of Hillel and Shammai wasn't just to be leaders, they were, like, the ultimate teachers. So, I think that they had their different perspectives on how to teach, and, like, Hillel was more of, I guess, an experiential teacher.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he needed the person to go through that experience of, like, seeing someone with patience to teach him how to be a good person, maybe? I don't know.
I completely agree with that, and that when we look at our Torah scholars today, we don't just think about how they're brilliant or how they're able to give a chiddush. It's very much about, could I respect them as a person?
Right.
Do they have integrity?
Exactly.
Are they ethical? Like, those are all reasonable questions to ask when thinking about our leaders. And I think, kind of building on what you're saying, Shoshana, like, because we need to have the Sagadata to show that Hillel isn't just going to teach us halacha, that he's an ethical person, that he, like, is a good educator and he is patient.
I think a takeaway of seeing these two stories together is it really all depends on the situation. We can't say blanket statements, non-Jews are good, non-Jews are bad. Dumma Benettina is awesome. This guy bothering Hillel,
not
so much
awesome.
Less so. So I think it just adds a point of you need to think. You can't just say as a blanket statement all non-Jews are bad. You can't just say as a blanket statement all non-Jews are good. Just like you can't say about any group of people or any thing like that. You can't say this is good, this is bad. You
can't generalize.
You can't generalize unless you're talking to 4-year-olds. Then you should, but I
like
tend not.
Hitting other people is bad.
Yes, hitting other people is bad.
Yeah, did you want to say something? Was that like your hand up?
Education major over here.
Hitting people is bad.
Well, this is with the building stick.
Keep it. So thank you guys all so much for coming.
Thanks, Shosh.
Anybody wants to discuss it further?
I actually never read the comic book. So, no.